Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 315 for comics originally released on August 21st, 2013. Now, starting us off in DC is Batman and number 23, and this time the guest star is Nightwing. This is the final part of the story arc, kind of with the ramifications of Damian's death. This one on acceptance. Some of those issues have been good. Some, yeah, not so much. I really thought this was the best of the story arc. A lot of this was kind of set up, in my opinion, for the last five pages of the comic. But man, those five pages just knocked it out of the park and really made this comic great. And I think everything else leading up to that was needed. What were your thoughts on this issue?
My favorite of the five stages. I loved it from the beginning right through. I thought it was... it was what I needed as a reader, I think. I had been railing about Damian's death and why it really needed to be, you know, in all the other titles. And I might have been going through some stages of grief myself as a reader. And this was very therapeutic. Reading this comic, it was so emotional and I loved it. And I felt the healing myself. And it was just a great capper to these five stages, and you know, cements Tomasi as, you know, writing the second best Bat book for sure.
Well, in these days, that's quite a feat, because they're doing a lot of really good Batman books.
Yeah.
What I liked is the characters were very true to themselves. They really got what works about these characters, how they interact. And it's something that if it was done poorly, it could have felt very cheesy, very sappy, and it didn't come across that way. It came across very honest and real, and like, this is how these characters should have felt, should have acted, and should have been.
I love the fact that Nightwing helped him through that process and solved that part of the puzzle that he was working on with the simulation machine, virtual reality thing. I love that part. I loved Alfred's, you know, those last few pages with Alfred, those amazing writing and art and coming together and just really telling what you needed to see. It was really fantastic.
Yeah. Well, and again, Nightwing was the guest star here, but like you said, Alfred, the use of the character was just so well done and really ended the issue on a strong note. And again, it's nice when they can do something that's a bit more introspective or reflective or, you know, emotional or whatever, and have it just pay off so nicely. I still think it was a mistake to kill off Damian because he was just such a dynamic and fun character. And out of all of the Robins they've had, and they've had a ton over the years, he was very unique.
He definitely was, and he was one of my favorites. And but this book helped. This book helped put that behind me.
And for me, this was a very strong 4 out of 5. I'm curious how well I'm going to like the next arc in this. We know it's going to have Two-Face. We know it's going to have Carrie Kelly. Beyond that, I'm not sure for the other 5 parts. And then it's a question of where does this title go after that arc?
For me, I've got to give this a 5 out of 5. This is one of my favorite Batman ands since maybe the annual. I loved it from start to finish. I love the art. I love the writing. I love the emotions that the roller coaster that I was taking on. I liked even the clips of the Batman Inc. scenes that were kind of interpreted through Gleason's eye, you know, and translated. I kind of saw them fresher and in a different way. I loved everything about it.
Yeah. They're doing really good stuff, and I want to see them keep going with this. It's a question of, again, can they find either a good set of rotating guest stars or a you know, second person to fill the slot or something. They've got a great creative team and they're doing great work with it. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was really not looking forward to Batman and Two-Face. I didn't appeal to me at all. But after reading this, I'm putting my faith in Peter Tomasi and that he's going to write a good story and keep me engaged in that title, because you know he's really knocked it out of the park on some really solid, strong issues. And so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt going forward.
I'm a little cautious, but again, you know, like you said, benefit of the doubt and stuff. I try not to judge any comic till I actually read it. Just seem to think that's a fair thing to do. But again, like I said, I'm curious what the future direction of this title is going to be. And there are a lot of ways they could go that could really make it work, and a couple that, maybe not. But having lost one of its anchor characters, and really I would say it the main anchor character. I mean, yes, it was a Batman book, but Robin being in it was what made it more unique.
It was half the title, yeah.
Well, it was the more dynamic half of the duo. He was the one that was just really taking more chances, more in your face. And again, Batman's in so many other books that if that's all you wanted, there are better books to go get that from. So, you know, again, fun stuff. Curious, you know, what direction the title takes both during that next arc and after it.
Yeah, but I'm a little more excited and a little more optimistic about it now after reading this final stage, because there were a couple stages there where I wasn't that thrilled with the stories. So this really ended well and capped it, and it makes me excited for that next issue.
It seems like this was the part of the arc they thought through the best.
Yeah.
So I can see that. Cool. Shall we move on to Marvel?
Sure.
We got Cable and X-Force number 13. Now, I was reading through this, and a couple of things really, really popped out to me. One, on the art side, we've got Salvador LaRocca doing some great work. You flip a page, bam, you hit, Gerardo Sandoval?
Yep.
Not a bad artist, but man, just a different enough style that it was kind of a bit jarring. You know, LaRocca's got, I'm going to say, a more realistic style, maybe, or at least a more polished, less anime style, I'm having a hard time describing this, but the difference is very visible. You've almost got, with Sandoval, more of a Humberto Ramos kind of a feel to the art, whereas with LaRocca, again, it's not that kind of, I don't say exaggerated or cartoony or anime, but it's a very different style. And that shift in the art really kind of took me out of the story a bit, which you know, didn't help my reading of the issue.
Right. And did Hopeless and Bunn always co-write this? It was Hopeless for a while, wasn't it?
This was billed in the solicit as just Hopeless. So it may be that they are either he got swamped and needed help, or that they're phasing in Colin Bunn. I am not sure. That's one of those I would have to go look up the previous credits and stuff.
One's doing the plot and one's doing the script. I don't know which is more important. Probably the script.
I don't know. There were aspects of this where I think the plot, frankly, could have used a little bit of work. And there are parts where I thought the script really added, and a few places where it didn't. I mean, frankly, I like the previous issues of the series more than I like this one. This wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. And I think you could divide the issue into three very distinct parts. You got the parts with Hope, which are mainly exposition, kind of explaining the reveal at the end of the previous issue and kind of what's going on and what's the big deal. And it's like, okay, that was interesting, but a little exposition heavy. And you got the parts with Cable, which Sandoval drew, and therefore the art didn't really click with me as much. And that was mainly exposition from Cable to Havoc, kind of rationalizing the dirty work approach that X-Force has and why they're so, you know, who cares what people think, we're just going to do what we need to approach. And that didn't work for me. It didn't seem well set up with this in this issue as to why they were having that discussion. I think the segue from the previous issue to this one, they didn't reset the scene well on that part of the story. And then we got the rest with X-Force. That was mainly the generic almost fight the monster action. And I was just amazed how well the resident geniuses of this team were able to prove just how ineffective they could be. And they, frankly, Forge and Dr. Nemesis seemed a little just off character. Like this was the wacky, humorous action-adventure version of the characters instead of the serious scientists and smart guys they've been shown to be. It's not that they were out of character, but it was enough of a different spin on the character to not totally work. And frankly, we'd gotten that take on Forge the entire run so far here.
I did notice a little bit about the art that you were mentioning, more so with the Hope and Strife panels, where I could not tell who was who. They didn't look really distinctly different.
Well, go to the page with the staple.
Flip I'm looking one. At it digitally.
Oh, okay. That would be
about 12.
We'll go to where we first see the Deathlock.
Okay,
you got his full face or whatever. That page, again, clearly Salvador LaRocca, very clean art style and so forth. Then move a couple of pages, really just like three more pages, where we've got, again, Deathlock with all the wires and stuff. He's in the center panel, and it's just, he looks very different. The whole art style has shifted.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, within a scene. And then go another page or two, and you get Cable, and he's got the gritted teeth, the angry look, and it just seemed a little overdone compared to how, I don't say understated, but, again, the two art styles didn't merge well.
Oh, yeah, some of those pages with Hope and Strife, I couldn't tell who was who. I mean, like, one's looking to the left, the other's looking to the right, and they look like they could be the same person.
Well, yeah. They should have not done as many close-ups. They should have given a few other cues as to the differences.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing that got me was this whole bit with what's going on with Cable and how essentially the time stream is being mucked with. And it's like, that's why they can't have nice things. I mean, this is why the whole space-time continuum is so broken in the mainstream Marvel Universe. They keep monkeying with it. And once again, it's the heroes that do it. And this time it was the mutants. I blame the mutants.
Yes.
This all falls into the whole Infinity stuff. In terms of, you know, oh, geez, they've cracked space-time wide open. It's like, well, they keep trying to. Again, this wasn't a bad issue, but I think some of the earlier ones were a lot stronger. I think the interplay between Colossus and Domino in a few of the issues was a lot of fun. We didn't really get that here. The banter between Forge and Dr. Nemesis, while entertaining, undercut the characters rather than helping them, in my opinion. I think there are better issues of this title to sample and to read if you're curious about it.
Yeah, I you know, got a little bit up to speed with the Marvel intro page because I had not been reading this. And tried to kind of enjoy it for what it was, but it didn't do much for me, and didn't really help me enjoy the title. So I ended up around a 3, and it wasn't even a high 3. It was just a 3, and that's just okay. I mean, it was a passable comic, but I won't want to read this anymore.
I can see that. I mean, to me, that's exactly where it landed too. Smack dab in the middle of average. Not great, not horrible. There were a few things that were unfortunate about, you know, having to switch artists mid-issue and stuff. And whenever I give a book like this that I've had a couple of not-so-complimentary comments about, that's a 3, it's average, I occasionally get comments of, well, how can you say that's average? I read about 200 comics a month. I read a lot from Marvel, DC, Independent. I think I've got a pretty good gauge on what an average comic is. And to me, this falls squarely in that camp. Not so bad that, oh, I've got to drop this, but not so great to actually get somebody on board if they're sampling the title. You know, it's just kind of there. It has its moments. It has its weaknesses.
Is double shipping now?
Yes, at least for this month. Whether it is every month or not, I'm not sure. Not necessarily one I would have... Well, I don't know. Again, the earlier issues, I was really enjoying both the art and the story style. I think this was a bumpy issue for this title, and I don't think it's representative of how the title usually is. But, you know, hey, it's the one we were reviewing, so it's what we're going to talk about.
Exactly.
I always kind of hate that. You pick a book thinking, wow, I'm really liking this, and you get an issue. It's like, ooh, bad one to have picked.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey. Shall we move on to our other book for the week?
Yes, let's do that.
That is Bloodshot number 0. Now, this is not the first 0 issue that Valiant's done. And as much as I kind of hate to say it, it was not the best they've done either. Wasn't bad. I thought they did a really good job establishing Bloodshot's, quote-unquote, lack of finesse, and just sort of the extreme sort of collateral damage that his missions tended to result in. But the solicit for this was really promising a lot more about the origin of the character and, you know, what memories are real, who is this guy, what's going on, this holds all the answers and stuff like that. And I was wanting a bit more about Bloodshot and less about the guy who nominally fixed the finesse problem, which he maybe did, maybe didn't. This one, I didn't really feel like I got a solid answer as to who Bloodshot was or is. So it promised a lot and didn't deliver on the promise. That having been said, was not a bad issue. Again, not as good of a zero issue as, say, Archer and Armstrong had, but it had really solid art, really great art for that matter. Told good story, set up a lot of good stuff. It was just, again, failed to kind of clarify Bloodshot's backstory, tongue-tied there, as much as I was kind of hoping it would. So it may just be the expectations I had versus what it delivered as much as anything else. What did you think?
This was a kind of a valiant dipping of the toe in the water for me this week. On your recommendation, I picked up the first four issues of Archer and Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
Loved them.
Oh, yeah. It's a great title.
It's a great title. I don't know why. I must have been asleep when that came out because it's really good. Really reminiscent of Chew to me. It has that same kind of early Chew issues.
Interesting. Okay.
And I know it probably came first because back it predates to the 90s, but it still had that same kind of style and look to it and same sensibility. Really great. And then I also read the first two Quantum and Woody issues, and I thought those were really solid. So I was two for two on Valiant titles, and then this was our pick, and I loved it. I loved Bloodshot Zero. I thought it was great for me. I had no idea what I was looking at when I opened this book up. And
so this was your first introduction to the character?
Never even. Yeah, I knew it existed.
Okay.
I knew this title existed. That was it. I didn't know who he was or anything. And the way it was introduced from the point of view of the scientist that's brought on to improve him,
mm-hmm.
and make him a better at what he does so that he doesn't just kill children so often.
You are in the way of the door. Kablam! Yeah, that's a little extreme.
I thought that was just great, where it didn't work for me in the Carnage book where they kicked off with an accountant character or something that was kind of narrating the book and he didn't really belong in the book.
Well, he was disposable and had no connection to anything of relevance, whereas this guy was there as part of the project to fix things. He was central to the story.
He was, and it really helped me understand what it was. I mean, this is a violent, brutal, scary book.
Yeah.
I mean, if this is any indication of what it's like, it's pretty rough, the things that are going on in here. So it really helped me get in there to the character, understand what it was all about, and I just loved it. I mean, I assumed that the fixer character was just part of the book until it progressed.
Until you realized he wasn't.
Until I realized he wasn't. But I love this book. I gave it a 5 out of 5.
Wow.
This was a wonderful intro, zero issue for me, and makes me want to continue to read this and other Valiant books. I need to check them all out, I think, because I think I've really missed out.
I would agree with that. I think they've done a ton of great stuff. Bloodshot is one of my favorite titles, surprisingly enough, because this is fairly indicative of the level of kind of violence and gore and frankly grossness it sometimes has. He was missing his face for part of the Harbinger War stuff. And that stuff, frankly, very much turns me off, but it's a good book. It's an interesting book that it's like, okay, I'll kind of slog through the grossness because it's a good story. And I think that may have been part of what gave me a lot more lukewarm reaction to this issue. Again, that kind of level of gore and violence, which this certainly had, is, you know, a hot button issue for me, like I said. I would recommend you check the series out, and I'd be curious what you think of it once you read it.
Well, yeah, Matt Kent's doing them all, I'm definitely on board. I don't think he is.
No, but I think they've had some other writers on it, but Valiant's been very good about not doing any jarring changes so far to the art style or the story writing style or tone. I mean, obviously the art styles have shifted a little with artists, but to a complementary type and between issues to where it's not like you flip a page and it's like, what the hell happened here? Which is, again, kind of what I felt with Cable and X-Force.
Yeah, this issue had a lot to like about it. And the whole scientific kind of examination of the soul and how much it weighs, you know, I've seen that before. I think it was a movie along those lines. Say,
that's been out there somewhere before, too. I recall.
Yeah, but I liked the idea, and I liked the concept, and it really worked seamlessly in here and made a lot of sense and fit and was perfect, and it was executed well. And like I said, this was a great book for me. I really liked it.
Cool. I'm glad you liked it. I guess for me, the other thing was, well, you were new to the character aspects of him with the nanobots and all that stuff. I already knew from the series.
Okay.
But if you're coming at it cold, I can see where this would have been a very effective setup. And again, the way they established the lack of finesse and the collateral damage and stuff at the beginning of the issue, it's like, again, kind of gross, but they really set up, okay, this is why they need to tweak the program a little.
Yeah. And I don't know what Zero issues are marketed to. Hey, you're a new reader. We're far into this run, but hey, you're a new reader. Hop on. This will get you up to speed. Or it's for existing readers to, hey, here's a little backstory that you did not know.
Ideally, it's for both. I mean, they shouldn't be either or. They shouldn't be mutually exclusive.
Yeah, the good ones should do both.
And I felt really with Archer and Armstrong, the first issue really set up, you know, the characters and stuff, but then the Zero issue went further back and really led into that very well. So it can be done amazingly well, even by, you know, and Valiant has proven that. For me, as an existing reader who's a little squeamish, this one didn't fire on all cylinders for me. But again, that may be as much me as anything else. So I'm glad you liked it, and I definitely recommend checking out the other stuff by Valiant. They are, I think, an up-and-coming publisher with just a really good track record right now on consistent quality and material.
Well, it's really 3 for 3. I enjoyed Quantum and Woody for what it was, and a little more lighthearted.
Mm-hmm.
But it had some really, really funny, genuinely funny moments in it, and I thought it was solid, and it wasn't what I was expecting. And Archer and Armstrong was just really, really good and really engaging. And I've only read the first 4 issues, so I've got a ways to go. But it was a great arc, and I loved every minute of it. So if these 3 titles or issues are indicative of the quality of Valiant, I think I'm going to be doing the DCBS value pack deal or whatever. And I might be getting them all here pretty soon.
I think it's indicative of the quality, again, the art style, particularly on Shadow Man's a little bit darker, a different style or whatever. But certainly, yeah, I think those are indicative. And the value pack or whatever they do at DCBS, I do it every time they've got it. It's very much, I think, if you like one, you've got a good shot at liking them all. Again, with Shadow Man being a little bit more of their Vertigo-ish kind of a title, not to say that's good, bad, different. It's just enough different from the almost more superheroic titles for the other ones that I could see where that maybe somebody wouldn't like that as much or might like it more than the others, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. What did you give it?
I gave it a high three. Again, it didn't quite work for me. It wasn't bad, but again, I think I was expecting more out of it than I got in terms of answers for who this guy really is, what the backstory is. And I mean, on the one hand, they kind of gave some of that and whatnot, but it may just be as simple as it wasn't the answers I was wanting. I may have actually answered the questions, just not how I would have liked, but it was a good issue. So yeah.
Yeah, this did everything that a first issue that, you know, it's not a first issue, but the first issue that I've read should do is entertain me from start to finish and make me want to read another issue. I mean, that's spot on for me.
Well, and again, for an on-ramp issue, which is clearly what this was, it worked out beautifully for you, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
So cool. So I was out of town on a cruise ship for a week. I have read a fair number of things, certainly nowhere near everything that came out for this week. I've frankly still got a few things from the previous week. One of the things I thought we might want to discuss briefly that came out this week was Number Cruncher number 2.
Oh, I haven't got to read that one yet.
Oh, you haven't gotten to read that one?
No.
Oh, well, we'll have to talk about it next week then. I made sure to read it. I'm thinking Drew's going to want to talk about this.
Doggone it.
So, that was one that after we had talked about the first issue, I'm like, do I want to keep it on with it? Do I not? I decided to, and I'm glad I made that decision.
Oh, good. Good. That's great.
That publisher is very much gotten on my I need to keep an eye on them list.
Yeah. Now, Titan, I had not heard of them before.
I had heard of Titan, but like in Titan books, not in terms of Titan comics.
Yeah.
So, you know, I if they've done comics before, that was kind of lost on me.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm curious what you think of that one when you get a chance to read it.
Okay.
We got the final issue of Legion. Again, sorry to see that one go.
For me, that I had not read any of the previous 22, but I wanted to dip in on 23 and just see how they sent it away. And all the little boxes that they inserted with everybody's names and powers and just who they were, that was very helpful for me. And probably redundant for you, but I really liked that. That really helped me kind of keep track of who was who, because there were a lot of characters in this issue.
Yeah.
But it was nice the way they sent everybody off and the way they closed things up and left it on a nice note, I thought. I thought it was a really good final issue.
Yeah. I mean, I was sorry to see it was a final issue, but again,
right.
Kevin Maguire on the art, hard to go wrong with that. Jeez. And as for the little identity boxes or whatever, it's almost like having a DVD pop-up or overlay or whatever as you're reading the thing. As an existing reader who knows all these characters and stuff, occasionally I hit one, it's like, who's that again? But not often. It doesn't get the least bit in the way.
No.
And it makes it so much more accessible. It shows that you can have a title with just a lot of characters and still keep it very easy to get on board with.
And it shows the quality of the team that's on this, because they could have, they knew this was the final issue. Mm-hmm. They could have phoned this thing in, but to go to that extra care for a person who might be reading this comic new to the title, you know, still taking that extra step, I think says a lot about that creative team.
I don't think Paul Levitz could have phoned this in. He is such a long-term, hardcore Legion fan, as well as just Legion creator and stuff, that it is unthinkable to me that he would have done anything but his best.
I felt it. It came off the page.
I want to see where he goes next on the writing stuff, because I would like to see more out of him. Would like to have seen more Legion, but, you know, hey, it's not going to happen. I got it.
I really like your idea of, let's make this a digital first. And let it be digital for a while. And, you know, you wouldn't have to maintain, you know, 25 to 30,000 a month in sales on the digital side, would you? You know, I mean, there's got to be, I mean, what are we selling for Arrow? 8,000 copies a month? And it's sustainable. So why not make Legion digital for a while to keep a title like that that has such pedigree and longevity in the universe going? Keep it going. And the fans would find it and be able to continue with it. I think that's a great idea.
I really would like to see them do that. Some of the digital first things like Smallville, Batman Beyond are selling better than Legion was selling, and that's the print version of the digital first comics. And Injustice Gods Among Us was selling about 10,000 units more, so it could definitely work. And you know, even if it were to sell less, kind of like
Arrow.
But I was thinking more Ami Kami Girls. Well, actually, Arrow is way down there. That's why I didn't see it. I wasn't looking far enough down.
You did. Yeah, you had to look way down there.
Yeah, like 9,334 units on that ninth issue.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe it couldn't do a weekly thing. Do it bi-weekly, you know? It seems like a way to keep certain characters out there and rather than just put them entirely on the shelf.
Yeah.
And particularly a team like the Legion that has shown that it's got a loyal fan base.
I don't know enough about the business model inside, behind the curtain of DC, to know just how much they've got in these creative teams to where the break even point is sales wise. So, I mean, if you can get $2.99 for a digital title, I would think you're way far ahead. You know, if you sold 10,000 copies at $2.99 for digital, then you would be for selling 15,000 or 20,000 in print because you don't have those overhead costs. I would think that they should do these more like that. I think that it just makes more sense to me. But
well, you don't have the print costs and you don't have the cut taken by the retailer in Diamond. For the digital stuff, you do have a cut taken by Comixology, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's going through iTunes, Apple and stuff taking a cut. So you kind of wind up not that much better off than you might think.
But I think there's the 40% to the retailer you do not lose. I don't
know how big the cut is from Comixology and Apple and stuff. Yeah. What I recall reading at one point was it was surprisingly close. And the difference is, though, even with that, once you get that issue uploaded and out there, yeah, you may only be getting, you know, a third or whatever of the cover price or whatever, but you'll be getting that forever as long as people want to go find that.
It's never out of print.
Never out of print. The long tail really comes into play, and if you can get enough to maintain the cost of content creation, you're good. You know, you can make the money on the long haul versus the short term.
And it makes sense also because you've got this Warner Brothers arm that needs to be fed. We've got these properties for the big screen that need to be viable properties. And once you get through the Justice League cycle and your Batman, Superman, and you know you're gonna need new stuff. And if the more titles that are out there, even in digital form with fan bases and storylines, the better, and the better things to choose from to develop and for your movie arm. It just makes sense to me that you wouldn't want to put these characters to bed and out of sight and out of mind.
Well, and particularly this set of characters.
Yeah.
They've had a cartoon with Superboy and the Legion that went 2 seasons. You could argue, oh, it's only 2 seasons, who cares? But they've been part of a tangential part of Smallville and, you know, other you know, live action and animated things out there. So there's some awareness of them. But also just on the comic side, they've been a mainstay of the comics to one degree or another for decades.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, if Talon were to go away or something. Okay, fine. I might miss the character, I might not. You know, but it doesn't have the pedigree, the length of publishing history, whatever, that the Legion has. So
and
I think
it might not be gone for long. We don't know. But
it's sounding like the Legion's not gonna show up in the Justice League 3000 though.
Mm.
So it may not be gone for long. I don't know.
Is Justice League 3000 going to show up? I thought they had some trouble with the creator on that.
What seems to have happened is they solicited the first issue. Something happened behind the scenes. I guess it was McGuire on the art. Seemed to think he got fired or something. Seemed to realize he didn't get fired, but they're doing something else with the art. And it sounds like they're gonna, I don't know if they actually have yet or not, but cancel the first issue and resolicit, I think, in the December time frame. So something's going on there, but I don't know what.
Mm.
What else did you read this week that you want to talk about? Again, I've only read a handful of things.
I do have to talk a little bit about Thor God of Thunder number 11, which we didn't get to talk to because we had a short show last week.
Okay, fair enough.
But this was the capper to the God Bomb story, and really all of those first 10 issues led up to this. This kind of closed the door on that storyline and was one of the greatest Thor stories I have ever read. I would put these 11 issues on the shelf next to Walt Simonson and the toe-to-toe right there. This thing was beautiful. You know, Aesop Ribic is just, he's amazing.
Hard to go wrong with him as an artist. Yeah. He's
Jason
great.
Aaron, he just was firing on all cylinders throughout this thing. And this final issue just pulled it all together, really said a lot. And was just wonderful. It was such a good story that I don't ever want to read another Thor ever. You know, it was.
And you think that's a good thing for Marvel? How?
It's not. That's not good for Marvel. But it was. it was so great that I'm scared to read anymore because I don't think it can do any better than they've done here.
It does raise the question of how are they going to follow up with it.
How would you? You could not follow up this. It was such a perfect. This thing needs to be bound with all 11 issues in some kind of ultimate edition or something because it's just a beautiful 11 issue run and it's so great, so inventive, so creative. I just loved it so much that I mean I should be excited for the next issue. This should make me excited, but I'm a little tentative that what can he do now? What's he going to do with 12?
I completely understand that because I've had a couple of things where it's like, wow, this was such a solid story, such a great ending point. Anything else might ruin the experience almost. And I agree that the 11th issue really was an excellent end cap to the story. I think in hindsight, because I know I've said, oh, it went on too long and all that kind of stuff. I think this is one they should have double shipped. I don't know that they could have, because I don't know they could have gotten the art done and fast enough or whatever, but this storyline started in the middle of November, and it took till a week or two ago to finish. So that's the better part of a year.
As it was, Sud Ribic didn't. He had to take a breather issue here and there, and let somebody else do it because he couldn't keep up with the month to month.
And I get schedule, that. I don't think they could have or should have rushed him to get the yard out. But if they could have finagled the schedule to where he started earlier and it started later or whatever, I think if this had come out in a shorter time frame from a reader perspective, my complaints about how long it took would have not happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have maintained story momentum a little better for me. And again, this is something that I think people who read the collected edition, which again, if they don't do an 11 issue hardcover of this, they're fools. It just seems like such an obvious thing to do. And would be such a great reading experience.
It's so good. It was just so good. And, I'm on the fence. I'm not sure if, reading it in trade would benefit this. I think the month to month consumption of these bite-sized pieces was just exactly what it took. And that you had to think about it, ruminate on it a little bit, let it marinate. and you can tell I haven't eaten. I've got a lot of food metaphors. And that really benefited the story. I don't know if it would have read as well in a trade. We'll find out.
I see where you're coming from. I guess for me, something like Astro City, which is just a really deep read with so much material per issue,
mm-hmm.
reads better as a single issue.
Yeah.
I think there are some things that have such a jump between issues, such a lack of story momentum between issues, that they read much better in trade. I think this Thor story would read differently but equally well in both formats. I think it's one that, certainly if you get it in trade, you shouldn't, or hardback, just race through the whole thing as fast as you can. Take it in, absorb it, go at a comfortable pace. But I think it's one that would be enough of a page turner to just keep you moving through it. And would be a very satisfying read in that regard.
Yeah, I lean more towards the Astro City side or like a Mind Management that are the issues are little works of art and just crammed full of stuff to examine that I wouldn't want. I would think they would lose something in a trade form, but you know, you never know.
How about this as a compromise? They go for like an absolute sized kind of tabloid sized thing. Blow the art up a little bigger, therefore takes longer to turn the pages.
And make the pages heavier. I like it.
Yeah, make the pages heavier and bigger. And it's beautiful art. It would really stand up well to that.
I think you can't go wrong either way.
Yeah.
No matter
pick
how
it up if
it.
You haven't read it. It's what we're saying, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Also, from that same week, I did want to touch really quickly on Ghosted number 2 from Image.
Okay.
I thought that was a really solid second issue. And kind of catapulted that title because I liked the first issue, but I wasn't sure how where it was going to go. But it kind of catapulted it up a notch for me reading number 2 into that second tier Image title. You know, it's not it's right below The Walking Dead and Saga and the premiere stuff, but it might be close to an East of West Lazarus title. I think it might be a strong one that's in it for the long haul. I really thought those first two issues were very solid, and it's promising for a title to continue to read that.
Cool. That's good to know. Again, Image is coming out with a lot of great stuff these days. I think they're really doing a good job of picking which titles they come out with. There's still some delays here and there, but it's not like it once was, where just everything was delayed. Mm-hmm.
And we had some Trinity stuff, Pandora stuff. We had Trinity of Sin 3. We had Justice League Dark 23. And we had JLA, I believe, the week before. Is that right? We had
three titles. Trinity of Sin, Pandora number 3, Justice League Dark number 23, and this week. And then last week was...
I think it was Justice League of America.
Yeah, it was.
And they kind of all blended together a little bit for me.
And Constantine. Or no, that was not connected to that.
I don't think that one
was.
No,
it wasn't.
But a lot of superhero infighting and a lot of hot potato with Pandora's box. It was, I don't know. What are you thinking about this series as we come to the end?
I think it was not pitched well, because when Trinity War was first teased, oh, we're finally going to get Pandora. She'd been in every book. I was thinking much more event than just Justice League crossover. And any crossover that involves three superhero teams just infighting seems to boil down to just gang warfare and not, you know, super heroics in my mind. Not bad, but this thing has had its moments. A couple of things I liked. I mean, I liked the Constantine issue that tied in. They're doing some interesting stuff. It just hasn't really knocked my socks off. So overall, I mean, above average, but not brilliant.
Right. And we're calling this a crossover, and Forever Evil is an event, but this crossover actually leads into this event. So
yeah.
Is it a pre-event?
Pre-event. Wow, what a concept.
We gotta come up with these terms. We gotta get ahead of the curve on these.
Yeah. Well, and the whole idea of a pre-event is not new, because we had a couple going into Infinite Crisis, and a few of the other actual events and stuff.
It'll be interesting to see what happens.
To me, the key difference between Trinity War and what I would consider really a true pre-event sort of a thing is, I would consider, in my mind, just having just, you know, you mentioned the thing for the first time. I would consider something a pre-event if it was billed as blatantly leading into future event.
And we just kind of found out that this was going to lead into Forever Evil at the last minute.
Yeah.
I don't think it was always the plan, was it?
Well, it may have always been the plan, but it wasn't always marketed as such.
Mm-hmm.
It was not always clear that was the plan.
Right.
And to me, that's a key distinction, because you could argue that Infinity is coming out of Age of Ultron. And on the one hand, it is, but really, it's not like it was an integral part of, you could argue if it was an integral part of Age of Ultron or not. A better example would be Captain America's death at the end of Civil War. That was something that whole arc with Captain America could have been kicked off anywhere, and was not part and partial of the crux of the story of Civil War. It was just, we've done this, and we're going to use this to bridge and push you over into this story.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on with Trinity War looks like it's going to have and this event at the end of this kicks off this other thing. Not that Forever Evil was predestined and couldn't possibly have been told any other way than this.
You never know. It doesn't seem like it.
I still haven't gotten satisfaction on why Pandora was in every first issue of the first go-round. I kind of touched on it, kind of explained it. It just hasn't paid off for me, hasn't sold me on it. You know what I mean?
No, they do have another issue, though.
True.
Two. So maybe that's where it's going to be. Or no, there's just one. Just Justice
the one.
League, just Justice League 23.
Just the one.
My goodness. Let's see. Superman Unchained number 3. Now, this is Scott Snyder. This is Jim Lee. What am I missing here? Why do I not like this at all?
I was going to ask you the same sort of question, actually.
What? How can you have two superstars of the genre, and this thing just lays there like a dead fish, and I don't get it. I'm It's not horrible, but it's nothing that I really want to read. I'm forcing myself to read it.
It's the slow burn of the story, I think. The end of the first issue, we get this reveal of, ooh, there's this. Second issue, we get a little bit more. Third issue, we get a little bit more. And, oh, but this is going to happen. I must do this, or, you know, whatever. And anytime you need to end an issue on an overly dramatic beat, or almost like a rim shot or something like that, versus, I don't know, it seems like it's a writing crutch being used there, and I think Jim Lee's art is it's excellent, but a little indulgent in a few places, and not the best work I think he's done. Not the worst by any stretch either. None of his work's bad.
No, it's...
But it's not solid, clicking.
Yeah, it's not working. And this thing with the bad guy, or the foil to Superman, what's his name, Wrath?
Yeah.
Whatever. Now he's kind of like Superman's fan. He kind of likes the guy, but he's... It's like he took a 180 on his personality or something, or maybe it was always there and I just wasn't picking up on the subtleties or something. But it just seems like a different character in issue 3.
It seems to be meandering and indecisive in a few ways. And the look of the character, I think, was ill-conceived. On the cover here, he looks like a cross between Darkseid and, with the whole emblem and stuff, a little bit like a Batman-ish kind of a motif going on there.
Yeah.
So the look of the character, I think, isn't working for me. But this is one that I agree is just kind of falling flat a little bit, in my opinion.
Daredevil 30 had a nice little Silver Surfer crossover. I enjoyed this.
I was skeptical as to how well you could mix the power cosmic with the current take on Daredevil. And they did a fabulous job. It really fit. It really worked. The reveal of who was, you know, helping out at the law offices really worked for me. I thought that was good.
Yeah, that was great. And it's good to see them back together. I really like their chemistry. So I think that's good for Daredevil. It's good for Matt Murdock. So I like that a lot. The Alien was written so well that I was hook, line, and sinker right along with Matt Murdock the whole way. And I thought, my goodness, I couldn't believe how well he snowed me under. And it was just well written. Well done.
Wade is an absolutely amazing writer. He's one that, I mean, there are a couple of things he's doing right now on a couple of characters, particularly like Green Hornet and stuff, not totally clicking with me. But his body of work, by and large, I've loved most of it, if not almost all of it. And I think what he's doing here on Daredevil is exceptional.
I love this. Now, Indestructible 12? Yeah, didn't really do it for me.
It was okay. I'm not buying the whole Banner's mind and the robot and kind of why that matters.
Why is that important? And then we get these three Western characters, and we get introduced to them all, and you all recognize these guys, who these three are. I didn't, but it's okay. You know, they told me who they were, and then they're barely in it, and it really wasn't, they didn't need to be.
Yeah.
You could have told that story without them at all.
It could have been three random cowboys.
It really didn't make any sense. And now we're off to, what, Camelot?
Yeah.
And it looks like this is what we're going to be doing for a while.
Yeah, like he's bouncing around between different places.
Yeah,
it wasn't a bad issue, but it was not one of Wade's best.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why people don't have the buzz around that title that they do on Daredevil.
Yeah. And Nova 7, just...
Have not read that one yet, but okay.
Well, just one of 50 titles that Superior Spider-Man makes an appearance in. So prepare yourself. But I'm really liking Nova. But that and Guardians of the Galaxy were just they're really solid titles that launched at the same time. I really like both of them.
Marvel's got a number of good titles out there, and they've been, I think, doing a fairly good job of picking which titles to launch when and what creative teams to put on them. So I think they've, from an editorial perspective, really upped their game over the last year or so.
Now, X-Men 4 was... I wanted to read one more and just see how the new storyline kicked off.
That's
and this
another
was,
one I haven't gotten to just yet. But yeah,
I'm out. I believe I'm done.
That's too bad.
Yeah, you know, tell me if I'm wrong after you read that one. But I it was very, very soap opera like, and
it's kind of nature's beast with X titles. When you've got that large of a cast and so forth, it gets to who knows who's fighting with who's unhappy with who. You know, it's
in Superior 16. Superior Spider-Man 16 was really solid.
Yeah, that had some fun stuff.
That had a lot of fun stuff in it, exactly, and continues to be really, you can't miss title. You know, I'd put that, Daredevil, Hawkeye, just can't miss each month.
Yeah.
And, you know, you really, that's got to be on your can't cut list, so put those on there and keep them on there if you're not reading them.
Yeah, anyone who's still not reading Superior Spider-Man...
Because of...
for any reason.
Yeah.
If you're the least, if you're a Spider-Man fan, or even if you're not, I think it's worth picking up.
Yeah.
It's going with an open mind. If you've got some, you know, deep-seated, oh, I can't believe they killed off Peter Parker or whatever, get over it and give it a shot. Yeah, you know, is it something he'll be back and does it matter? You know, whatever. Yeah, I get all that. Mm-hmm. But the stories they're telling, the consistency and the quality of what they're doing, this is really a strong time for the Spider Office right now.
Yeah.
I can't say that often enough.
You could go all in on that wing and be pretty good. You know, you're going to get 6 or 7 great titles in there. You know, that whole arm of Marvel Universe is just fantastic with just a couple missteps.
Yeah. And again, it's setting up great stories for down the line, too.
Mm. So. Anything else stand out for you?
That's about all I've had time to read. I've still got a few things, like I said, hanging out from the previous week. I read Ultimate Comics, The Ultimates. That had some interesting stuff.
Okay, again, so that's really going to deal with direct repercussions of Age of Ultron, correct?
Ultimates, not Hunger.
Oh, okay. Okay, so the Ultimates not dealing with any of the time...
Doesn't Rips? Seem to be yet. It was, let me flip through this and refresh my memory. It's been a busy week for me.
And what about, like, Ultimate? Is Ultimate Spider-Man dealing with it?
Not yet. Mm. What's going to happen is Hunger leads into Cataclysm. Cataclysm has a bunch of mini-series for each of the different groups, you know, Ultimate, Spider-Man, etc. That's where they deal with all that.
Age of Ultron begat Hunger, which begat Cataclysm.
So that's a pre-event.
Okay. I want the cliff notes on what happened. I don't want to waste my time, I don't think, chasing all this down.
Well, and when they start chaining those kinds of things, it's like, come on, are you ever going to finish stuff up and give me some payoff?
Yeah.
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
But all in all, solid week.
Yeah, it's great week of some really good stuff. It's just, it's some big weeks these days. I mean, yeah. I'm getting, you know, 40, 50 books a week, and with the traveling I've been doing, no sooner do I catch up than I go off on another trip and I get a little behind. I mean, I've still got probably 6 to 8 issues from last week, the week of the 14th, and probably 30 or so from this week easily to go through.
And your box arrives tomorrow.
And my box arrives tomorrow, but 3-day weekend.
Yeah, it's 4-day for me, so I have no excuses. I have no excuses at all. Should get everything read.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Justice League 23 from DC, Scarlet Spider 21 from Marvel, and Think Tank number 9 from Image Comics. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.